Well, if you've ever despaired at the state of politics and what passes for public debate right now, then listen up. The authors of a new book believe there's a better way to go about things and they want you to hear them out. It's a form of citizen or deliberative democracy, which draws on the wisdom of the ancient Greeks and in particular their Athenian Council, where randomly selected citizens partook in making decisions about laws that affected their whole society. Already, 21st century variations of this idea are being trialled in a handful of countries around the world. Let's hear more about this. Luca Belgiorno-Nettis and Kyle Redman are both from the New Democracy Foundation, a not-for-profit research organisation focused on political reform. And together, they've written the ABC of Democracy. Hello, both of you.
Good morning.
First to you, Luca. What's wrong with democracy in the 21st century? I've got a few ideas, but what are yours?
Well, I think we all thought that elections would be the answer because they seemed like the fairest way to get representation. But what happens in that process is it tends to be divisive because people are always saying, you know, the candidates are saying, I'm better than you, and then you end up with these sort of tribal elements. And so we're thinking that there may be a better way to affect representation.
Mm-hmm. So people dig in the adversarial system. What about you, Kyle? I mean, what really frustrates you? Because you now work with the New Democracy Foundation. You've written this book. What's frustrated you enough to do that?
I think it's mostly around the constraints within the system. I think everyone sees this where we just wish they would get on with it and solve some of the pressing problems. And I guess that led to me thinking, really, why don't they do that? And this book is really an explanation of why they don't, really, and what the solution is.
Okay. Well, in the book, you refer to a kind of decision-making process that's been described as slow thinking. And I loved this when I read it because we've heard of slow food and we've heard of maybe slow fashion, which are both based on fairness and sustainability and really taking your time to enjoy as much as anything what you're doing. Slow thinking is a term coined by the Nobel laureate Daniel Kahneman and his colleague Amos Tversky. Luca, in the simplest of terms, what is slow thinking?
Well, it's actually Kyle dug up that reference, that analogy, and I think it kind of does work. But what happens, we think, in respect of politics now is that because we affect this representation by way of campaigning and elections, you actually end up with opinions that come through, you know, this candidate looks better than that. There's really not a great deal of public judgment that comes about through that process. And so we're thinking, you know, what we need to bring into the whole process of public policy development is this question of public judgment, which then can be, you know, made the analogy in respect of slow thinking.
Kyle, do you have an example of slow thinking that you might be able to use to describe it to people?
Yeah, Cathy, people do this all the time in their regular day-to-day lives. It might be, at the moment, everyone is probably planning that fictional holiday that they want to get on when we can finally leave the country.
Oh,
and
yes,
that picking of the destination and deciding where you'll spend your time is slow thinking. It's a lot of money to go overseas, and people reasonably weigh up the different trade-offs of being in different places. And really slow thinking is that kind of behaviour on anything from buying a brand new car or picking out a wedding dress.
Well, that's not something I've done. And maybe you have, Kyle, I don't know. But yes, these are the kind of decisions in life that people, well, I guess it's because you want the very best. You want the very best holiday, or you don't want to make a bad decision about a phone because you're going to have it for several years and it's so much part of your life. So you do think, oh, maybe I want, you know, something a bit bigger, or maybe I want more data, or I'm going to be using the camera a lot, or, you know, so you really think through all of the options and then you settle on something. And it may not be the one that you thought you initially were going to buy, or it may not have all the features, but after all that consideration, it's the one that works the best.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's in those situations, it's you who is doing the trade-off. You're kind of weighing up your own values. But when we think about it in terms of politics, those difficult trade-offs in terms of what the payoff is or the benefit will be different for different people. And so really what politics is about is finding a mechanism for negotiating those differences. And citizens' assemblies give people essentially the best environmental conditions for finding common ground.
Uh-huh. Okay, citizen assemblies. That's the first time we've mentioned that phrase. But this, Luca Belgiorno-Nettis, is something that you've been deeply involved with for a long time. How do we apply that slow thinking principle to a gathering of citizens that have been brought together to think about an issue that's important to a community?
I suppose by creating the environment in which, well, 30, 50, 80 more people can actually deliberate, and this is where the difference is in respect of, you know, debating or just dialoguing in a sense, because deliberation is talking about coming to that elusive common ground. So where do we find in the negotiations amongst ourselves in a big group what we can agree on? And what's surprising with these citizens' assemblies is that, in fact, you can find that common ground.
Yes, and surprisingly, successfully. Give us one of the shining examples of recent times that you've seen work. Really hard issues are tackled in these. Give us an example.
I think that the shining light example is what happened in Ireland on a number of occasions through the last decade, where they studied the question of abortion reform, they studied the question of marriage equality, and they did this through a process, you know, through citizens' assembly processes. And you know, it was quite a difficult process in the sense that they had to then have a referendum to determine the outcome at the end of this assembly process. But the assembly outcomes were used very positively in respect of the referendum, in the sense that people who went to the referendum were aware of what happened with the citizens' assembly and relied heavily on the advice, in most cases, of what the assembly deliberations were.
Yeah, just an extraordinary outcome for a country so deeply Catholic, and really amazing transformation. Kyle Redman, you've done some of these projects in Australia, working with New Democracy, one for the ACT government, the local government in Victoria, Yarra Valley Water, the Byron Shire Council, as well as the City of Sydney. Give us a flavour of what the processes that you've run are like. How many people in a room?
Yeah, so typically I suppose the process is around 35 people, anywhere from 20 up to about 50. That lets you capture a representative sample of the population. So we're talking randomly selected people from all walks of life coming together. They're given a problem to solve. So in Byron, it was balancing money that the council had for infrastructure spending, which was just vastly inadequate for everything that needed fixing, and so it was prioritisation around where to spend that money. It's easy for people to kind of take pot shots at what council does in the paper, but then when given the budget to balance themselves, they have to sit down and kind of figure out
yes,
where they're going to spend their money and then literally pick which potholes to fill. in the ACT, that was around sort of the challenge of the makeup and look and feel of suburban Canberra suburbs, and whether or not how they would balance the need for more housing and single person housing in an area that has luscious family homes and apartment blocks and nothing in between. So these are really questions that range from budgeting right through to the character of communities.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're talking here with Kyle Redman, Research and Design Project Manager with the New Democracy Foundation, and Luca Belgiorno-Nettis, the founder of that foundation, which is a not-for-profit research organisation based on political reform. And Luca's also the Managing Director of Transfield Holdings, a privately owned investment company in the infrastructure, renewable energy and industrial services sector. Okay, so I'm going to hit you with some of of the questions that you must always get from people who are a little sceptical. And the first one, I think, for you, Luca, is about representation, you know, and inclusivity. How do you make a process like this inclusive? If it's, for example, a meeting over several weeks of a certain amount of hour commitment from somebody, how does a farmer who can't leave his or her crop or livestock make that kind of commitment? Or what about the marginalised who might struggle with an 8-hour day format? How do you make it inclusive?
Well, it's a sort of a $64 question. In the $64,000 question, what is the best what is the best model of representation? And you know, it's kind of difficult to get beyond or get better than this so-called civic lottery or democratic lottery. The best analogy, of course, is the jury. That's the sort of remaining model that comes from the original Greek conception of democracy, which was, as you referred to in your opening remarks, the Athenian Council was selected by way of democratic lottery. So the poor, as well as the rich, even though they were just men, they were included in that council. And so, yes, okay, a farmer or a banker or whoever, a mother who hasn't got the time, well, you know, that's a process that happens now with the jury too. Clearly, with the jury, it's obligatory, so it's difficult to get out of it. In this process, there's no obligation, of course. There's no government that is going to penalise you for not partaking in a citizens' assembly. However, nevertheless, you can get pretty close. You know, the farmer who can't make it, you'll get another farmer who can. So you get pretty close. And so this is the genius, if you like, of the democratic lottery. It is quintessentially representative.
Yes, and you pointed out there that it was men in Athens. There was no women on them or slaves on the Athenian councils. But, you know, times have changed, and so presumably so would our sense of inclusivity. Okay, well, what about vested interests, Kyle? I mean, the feeling, and this is me talking completely in a personal capacity, I feel often by the time I've heard about a political decision, it's already been cooked up by vested interests who knew about it before the public and have made sure that they're going to get a massive slice of the pie, whatever decision is made. How do you circumvent that in this kind of democracy that you're talking about, or democratic process?
Really, it's about making sure the participants hear from, I guess, all of the vested interests. What we do at New Democracy is make sure that whoever we're working with on a citizens' assembly shares the problem early on in the piece. So sometimes the way vested interests work is in the sense that these topics don't even get put on the table, and there are lots of complicated long-term issues that the way we do politics now is really not good at addressing. Getting them on the table sometimes is the first step of getting beyond vested interests. But in the room, it's really about making sure participants can hear from a wide range of sources. One of the best tools we have for ensuring that that happens is letting the participants themselves pick from the expert speakers that they want to hear from. We often ask the question, what more information do you need to know and who do you trust to hear it from? There's no kind of, tricks or kind of gimmicks in this, in the sense that we're just really trying to develop an open and transparent model for people just figuring out things between themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you write in your book, The ABC of Democracy, that really what makes this process work well is a good remit. So if it's set up in the right way in the first place, then it should work well. And the example that you give is actually very close to Sydney's heart. You give these two remits on the same topic. Should we build a second airport? Is one of them. And the other one is, how should we meet our air travel needs? Describe why the second one is clearly the better one.
Well, the first one is asking a clear yes or no answer, which kind of really narrows the conversation down to ticking off yes or no on a set solution. These deliberative processes are a commitment to spending a lot of time and energy and resources in really educating a set group of people and figuring out their priorities and values that inform any decision they're going to make on this topic. So it's of most value to everyone if we can really ask them to solve the complex trade-off at heart of the issue rather than the headline question. So solving our air travel needs might open up a few other different avenues of resolving the issue rather than just looking at the answer that has already been presented. That kind of, Cassie, touches on what you just raised before in terms of the vested interest kind of thing. So opening up and ensuring that participants have a essentially a blank page to write their own solution is a core principle of these processes.
Yes, so you don't present it as a fait accompli. You actually, here is what is happening, you know, and here are a range of ways to think about it. All right, well, let's just get to the big question, and I think this is something that all of us have had on our minds. Luca, it feels to me that democracy is at a particularly fragile moment, and looking perhaps to America, the foundations of a democracy hundreds of years in the making was tested quite sorely at the beginning of this year with the assault on the Capitol. You know, within an age of social media and an increased conflict, where do you think we are with democracy? Is there a shining light that burns still bright, or are you a bit despairing?
Well, we are actually immodest and arrogant enough to suggest that there may be a solution to the current predicaments, and we think the solution is to actually reimagine democracy as it was originally conceived. And this is where the Americans, with all due respect, went on the tangent, and for very good reasons, they decided to have a meritocratic process, which was the Roman process, which was the election process. And in that, and everyone, not just the Americans, everyone sort of got on board with that, thinking, well, this is going to be good. We're just going to have the best and the fairest who are going to be our representatives through these election processes. And what's happened, as we've seen, is, as Kyle, in fact, has used this wonderful phrase, it's become a poisoned apple. Unfortunately, what's happened is we're seeing it that it's divisive. And so we're saying, well, look, can we, because and the Americans, you know, every electoral process, doesn't matter whether it's the US or in countries in Europe, or even worse, in less developed democracies, they become very tribal. And there's no reason for them to be tribal. In fact, the whole question of democracy is to build some sort of common ground, is build a process where people can find some amicable agreement. And this was the genius of the original democracy. In fact, the Americans refused to use, the founding fathers in America did not, they actually negated the Athenian process. They studied it. They were actually, you know, Jefferson and the others, they read Greek and Latin, and they chose to go the Roman way, because they thought that it was too difficult to aggregate, bring people over distances together in this civic lottery. So they chose to have this electoral process. Mm-hmm. So we're thinking, well, now let's just review this. Let's relook at this again.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Kyle? Just finally, I mean, social media companies themselves, there's so many disputes. If any of these processes that we're talking about fell over, they would be diminished perhaps in the eyes of the population. What could give us faith? You know, or how would you like to answer that huge question about the authenticity of a people's voice?
Yeah, I guess I'm really optimistic. I think at the moment, the sort of very nature of how we do voting and the type of political representation that we have incentivizes this behavior that's kind of really rapidly leaving political norms behind. It's kind of racing towards this feeling of winning at all costs. It's like a perpetual election campaign, and it's definitely not working, and I think most Australians and people around democracies are feeling really left behind and disappointed with what we've got. And I think part of the story, I guess, of the book that Luca and I have written is that it tells a bit of a narrative of our experiences in seeing citizens' assemblies and deliberative democracy in general building up a real head of steam. If we're a little bit realistic about it, politics is really just this two or a few competing bands of kind of really ideological extremists who kind of get hold of political parties because they care a lot about politics and are really interested in it. and they compete for votes from a kind of really change-averse or hesitant public. And if we're really realistic about that and that we build around it and create a system that incentivizes working together, then there's no reason why it can't succeed.
Well, boys, you've given this jaded old heart reason to believe.
Oh, good on you, Cassie. So kind of you. Thank you.
Well, it's kind of you because it really is hard to sort of keep believing. And, you know, there are good people everywhere, but they don't seem to be all in the right place at the right time a lot right now. Look, thank you so much for opening this discussion for us and showing us some excitement about a different way.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Luca Belgiorno-Nettis is the founder of the New Democracy Foundation, a not-for-profit research organisation based on political reform, and Kyle Redman, who is the research and design project manager with that foundation. And the book that they've written is called The A, B and C of Democracy, and I'll let you read it to find out what the A, B and C stands for.
This is Focus
with Cassie McCullough.